This episode has descriptions of sexual content and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Looking for weird? You found it. The Xandron Stone Science and Supernatural Podcast. From ghosts and hauntings to black-eyed kids, crypto creatures, cults, exorcisms, UFOs, and everything in between. If it's out there and it's weird, we're going to talk about it. Xandron Stone, the Science and Supernatural Podcast. Listen now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podfix. And remember to live life in excess.
Mystified.
Podcast. Hello, and welcome to Mystified. This is a podcast where we bring you strange and unusual stories. My name is Tasha.
And this is Steven.
And this is our last episode before All Hallows Eve. Are you ready for Halloween?
No, I'm not.
It doesn't even really feel like a real Halloween.
I know. Very disappointed with the turn of events that has led us here to where Halloween is going to be spent at home doing nothing.
Right, because at the beginning of the year, weren't they like, it's a full moon, it's on a Saturday, isn't it a full moon? I think it's a full moon.
I can't remember if it's a full moon, but I know it is on a Saturday, which is rare. So you can actually enjoy it without having to, you know.
Right. You have to go to work the next day.
Yeah. 2020 had so much potential and it just went straight to shit and it fucked up Halloween.
Yeah. The full moon will appear on August 31st, 2020, Farmer's Almanac said.
God damn, so, that's going
to
mean
such an event occurring Halloween only happens every 18 to 19 years.
Yeah.
So it'll be an extra special spectacle, according to the periodical. So, yeah.
It's going to be man, the dead all come back because the power of the full moon is able to split the veil.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very 2020 like, you know?
Yeah. I mean, would we really be surprised at that point?
I wouldn't.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
I'd just be like, can I go with you guys?
No, you're not going with them. You got work to do here at the house. You can't go with them, but
I want to play with my friends.
No, not unless you're back on November 1st. Ain't happening.
November 1st of what?
2020.
Oh, God.
Exactly. If we have to get through this the rest of this year, you do too. You don't get a pass to go hang out with the dead.
I want to go convert on Bald Mountain like in Fantasia. Mm-mm. But I just don't want the next part where the church bells ring and then everything's
hunky dory
whisked away. Yeah. See, I just want to stay in that
you
night.
Would probably get there and the church bells would already be going. So then you would have missed all of it anyway, yeah, because it's 2020. Anyways, so this is our last show.
Anyway, yeah.
Before Halloween, we're going to do an All Hallows Eve murder fest and just talk about true crime that happened on Halloween. Because it's rare for that to happen, you know?
Yeah.
For people to commit.
Never happens.
Murders.
Except for the two times that we picked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had to scour the internet. Forget about the episode I talked about a couple weeks ago. Or shit, was that a month or so ago?
I don't remember.
Forget about that one. Napa Valley. Nightmare on Dorset Street.
That totally didn't happen.
Totally didn't happen. We made that one up, actually. That was fake. Dateline got in touch with us and was like, hey, we want to do this whole funny thing with you. And we did.
Actually, it's just we skipped timelines. So now we're in the timeline where that never happened.
Right. Yeah. So this one only had two Halloween murders. And we're also going to be the only podcast covering Halloween murders for Halloween. Lucky you to be listening to this podcast. It's a once in a lifetime thing for you. Until next year rolls around, if we're still doing this podcast, then we'll magically find two more Halloween murders. It's crazy.
We'll probably cover more Halloween murders before the end of the year.
What are you talking about? There's only two, Steven. We've already said that.
Yeah.
We need people out there committing murders this Halloween. So we got murders to talk about in our next episode.
I'm going to say we shouldn't say that
we
for
shouldn't
legal
say
purposes.
That. That's true. That's terrible. Don't do that. Actually, really, just don't kill people. Like, do some other weird crimes that we can talk about. Stop, like, killing people. Shit.
But we also didn't tell you to do any crimes.
Just forget everybody. Look at the little light. And then wait, that only happens in person, not on podcast.
You don't have a light.
Damn it. We need like a podcasting.
Just have them flash themselves with their cell phone cameras.
Okay. Go look in the mirror. Pretend like you're taking a selfie. Just don't turn the flash off and then blind yourself. And then
forget everything.
Wipes everything. FBI. We were just kidding. Yeah, we're going to talk about true crime. We've been doing a lot of true crime lately, but we have some plans to talk about some weird other shit coming on soon. Like, true crime, but committed by animals. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
When animals murder you, literally murder you.
Happens a lot more than you would think.
We have a cryptid episode coming up. We have some more hauntings coming up.
Some more unexplained phenomenon.
So we're going to like get out of the true crime a little bit. Like, we're still going to stay creepy. They're still really weird. Don't worry. But we're not a total true crime podcast. We've just been really into true crime lately. So, you know, it's all faithful.
Yeah, because you can always
fucking there, yeah, man. Ugh, people always,
humans suck.
Yeah, we're terrible. We like to kill each other. That was a really long intro. There you go. 7 minutes of Tasha rambling.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Okay, so I know yours is probably longer than mine. That's usually how it works. So I'm going to go first.
All right.
Let's do it. Okay. All right. The year is 1957. The night is Halloween. And the time is 11 p.m. Okay.
All right.
Setting the mood for you. Normal suburban neighborhood. Little nondescript house. Mm-hmm. Not really little. Mid-size. Mm-hmm. It's nice. You know, it's in the burbs, right? Mm-hmm. Of California. So it's not little. The Fabianos have just finished watching TV and are getting ready for bed. They crawl under the covers and turn out the bedroom light. But before they can drift off to sleep, there's a knock at the door and then someone rings the doorbell. Peter Fabiano goes downstairs to give candy out to the late costume kid who is still out trick-or-treating way past everyone else. But I guess you always have like the scraggler that's maybe like got out late from something or parents. No,
that's unsettling.
Hey, look, it happens. We used to do it when we like had to like babysit or something, and then we'd finally get to go trick or treating, and we were like 14. But
no, I always found that unsettling. Like when there's droves of kids in the street trick or treating, and people are knocking on your door and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but afterwards, I've always thought that was a really good ruse. And so I've always found it.
But you're really suspicious to begin with. Like you have a suspicious mind.
I read a lot.
Well, obviously the Fabianos did not. Okay. Back to the story. Betty stays in bed upstairs while Peter, her husband, goes downstairs. She hears him open the door and say, "It's a little late for this, isn't it?" So he's more pissed off probably, or irritated that he's had to get out of bed.
Yeah.
He's not really worried about, you know, a trick or treater. It's just the fact that he was literally sliding in them sheets, them nice, cool sheets.
Well, it's 1957.
In his jammies. So,
yeah.
You know, like I wonder if they're like a baby blue color, like the button up jammies.
Or like striped.
Striped. White with blue stripes,
isn't
maybe.
Isn't that what Ricky always wore on I Love Lucy? They were always striped, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So the response Betty hears sounds like a man trying to talk like a woman. There's a loud banging noise, a thump, and then the sound of a car speeding away. Betty jumps from bed and runs downstairs to find Peter slumped in the hallway in front of the door, a bleeding wound just below his heart. Judy Solomon, Betty's 15-year-old daughter from a previous marriage, runs to call the police and ambulance for her stepfather. Peter is rushed to the hospital, but never wakes up. He died from a .38 caliber bullet lodged in his chest. He was only 35 years old. So he should have been suspicious.
Yeah.
And been like, who the fuck's ringing my doorbell?
.38 caliber is like the classic Hollywood murder caliber.
Right.
Snub nose revolver. Mm-hmm. Just pop. Like,
yeah. See? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You like that? Yeah. The cops instantly thought it looked like a hit, a mob hit to be exact. So 1957.
They mix in some good old fashioned racism California. Because his name is
Fabiano.
Italian. Yeah.
Clearly the mob took him out. But couldn't have been anyone else. Had to be the mob. Okay. The police begin to dig into Peter's past, and other than a brief brush with the law as a bookie. So,
okay.
All right. He didn't have a record or any other contacts with the mob. No one could guess who could commit this crime, which was dubbed the trick-or-treat murder. Imagine those newspaper guys that wore the hats. But why did the hat have a card that said press on it? Like, do you remember that?
I think that was to identify them.
Yeah, but in the movies, they're like wearing them in the newspaper office.
Well, you always kept your hat on.
Yeah, but why didn't you take the card out that said press? Clearly everyone...
Because then you might forget it.
That's just a... That's a lot.
They used to make cars with bulbous roofs to fit gentlemen's hats. Gentlemen loved their hats.
Okay, but...
No.
Okay.
It's not negotiable.
All right. Anyways. Betty, however... had one person she thought would want to harm Peter. Joan Rabble, a close friend of the family. Joan, 40, was a divorcee who worked as a freelance photographer. Betty had good reason to suspect Joan, but not because of any evidence, but because of a strong gut feeling. Peter owned beauty salons, and Joan had worked for one. That was where she had got to know Peter and Betty very well. They were all close friends, and well, Betty and Joan got really, really, really close.
Mm.
Yeah. The papers in 1957 would only say it was an inappropriate relationship.
See.
Yeah. Betty and Peter met in late 1940 and got married. She was already a divorcee, which was scandalous for the time, and Peter was an ex-Marine. In 1956, they moved to California and he opened up the beauty salons. But all was not so well in paradise. Betty and Peter were fighting. And Joan had a great solution. Betty could move in with Joan while Betty and Peter tried to work out their marriage.
I see.
While Betty and Joan were living together, they became very... Very. So in case you're not reading between the lines, Joan is a lesbian. Okay. She herself is a divorcee. And yeah, just was like, no, I'm lesbian. Yeah. I'm not going to marry. I can't be with a dude. So then she meets Betty. She gets all smitten with Betty. I'm guessing Betty gets smitten back. And then they kind of do their little thing on the side. While Joan's working for Betty's husband and Betty's married to her husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, no one really knows what happened with Betty and Joan, but what we do know is that Peter was threatened by it, which any man would be if his wife started having an affair with another woman, right?
Yeah.
Betty decided to patch things up with Peter, and Peter had one condition. Betty and Joan could no longer see each other, have any contact, and Joan was no longer allowed at their house, and Betty could not go to Joan's house. Betty agreed to this because she wanted to get back with her husband and was like, okay, fine. Maybe she was feeling guilty. Who knows? Whatever. But she breaks it off with Joan, cuts all ties. From what people say, Joan was not happy about this.
Yeah.
At all. So now police have a motive, a scorned woman. I guess in 1957, that's a good enough motive. For you to arrest someone for murder is the fact that she could have possibly had an affair. Right. With just how backward shit was back then, it was probably like lesbian. She definitely did it just, you know, because of her sexuality, not really for any other fucking reason.
Oh, yeah. That totally tracks with. Yeah. Law enforcement at the time.
Yeah. It's either she should be in an asylum or clearly she did a crime.
Yeah,
it's one
pretty
of the
much.
Yeah. On November 16th, they picked Joan up for questioning, but Joan insists she had nothing to do with the murder. She states she was home all night, and as proof, her car never left her driveway. They then question Joan's friend, Margaret Barrett. She claims that Joan borrowed her car Halloween night and returned it having driven 37 miles. When police confront Joan about the claims that she states she went to get groceries, but said she did not kill Peter. She did not pull the trigger.
How anal retentive are you to count the miles?
Right? Damn, you're like, okay, yes, you can use my car, but let me go check the odometer real quick.
Right.
Because I need to see exactly how many miles you're using on my fucking Oldsmobile.
That's like some overbearing parent shit. Like, they're like, I wonder if she marked the liquor bottles in the house,
oh,
too.
Oh, I bet that. Oh, Jesus. It's the 50s. Who knows? I even wrote, what kind of friend counts the miles you drive when you borrow their car? It's funny you said that because I wrote that. That was my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's whatever. With no solid evidence, the police have to let Joan go. They had no evidence to arrest her with in the first place, but whatever.
Yeah.
They have to let her go.
Well, I'm sure they figured they would get the hysterical woman in and they'd be able to crack her.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Mm-mm. There were no other leads, but the detectives were hopeful they could crack the case. Oh my God, seriously, stop saying all the stuff I'm about to read because you're in my mind. Why are you in my mind, man?
I don't know.
Did you look at my paper?
No.
I feel like you looked at my paper. But day after day, they made no traction and things started to look dire. Then a month later, an anonymous tip led detectives to a rented locker in a department store. Inside the locker was a 38 caliber pistol. Ballistics from the gun matched the bullet that killed Peter.
1957's ballistics. Yeah, that's some high quality science right there.
It's a bullet. That's a bullet. They match.
They use the same bullet.
Like. The bullet they used is back in the gun. good jobs. Good jobs, guys.
Yep.
Okay. My God, I wrote, this was one hell of a lucky break. And the detectives tracked down the gun owner, a woman by the name of Goldine Pfizer, a 49-year-old laboratory tech. Oh, I think she's only a 40-year-old laboratory tech. Oh, man. Did I just age that poor woman 9 years? Okay, Goldine, I'm very sorry. You're actually 40 years old when you're arrested for owning the gun that killed Peter. Not 49. That's my fault. Please do not haunt me because I did that. Okay, so Goldine is a 40-year-old laboratory tech at the Los Angeles Children's Hospital. She broke down in tears and confessed to pulling the trigger as soon as they started questioning her. But she had an interesting story to tell and insisted that it was not her fault. Another woman had cast a spell on her and she was powerless to fight it. The other bewitching woman was none other than Joan Rabble. Police hauled Joan back into custody. Now she's not saying a word. She's like, nope, not having it. Goldine is singing like a canary in the next room, but Joan's lips are sealed, baby. She ain't talking.
Got it.
You know what I'm saying? You know, they're grilling her. They probably got the light in her face. Five detectives are in there smoking like you can barely see. Joan sitting there with her arms crossed.
Also smoking.
Looking to the side. I mean, she ain't talking to nobody. They're slamming the table, hiking their pants up to their nipples.
That's the funny thing I always like about those old noir movies and stuff is like they're all in there like grilling and yelling and stuff and then like all smoking together. Like,
right.
It's a weird conflict of, you know,
interest. Yeah, I don't know. In her confession, Goldine states that the two women had known each other for about 3 years. But recently, after Betty Fabiano had severed all ties, Joan had begun to seduce Goldine. First of all, I love the name Goldine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm digging it. I mean, if your name is Goldine, you're killing somebody in 1957.
And then you're going to grow into an old granny that prunes her roses. And then
I can hear fucking Dolly Parton, Goldine, but it's Jolene. I know that, but I'm hearing Goldine in my head. Sing it, Dolly. Okay. So during their time together, Joan's favorite topic of conversation was Peter Fabiano. How bad is that got to suck? Like you're starting a new.
Yeah.
Relationship, a lesbian relationship. So something you're not even like, this is all new for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the chick you're digging is nothing but talking shit on some other dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, that's it.
The husband of her last crush. Yeah.
Right.
Interesting. That's some baggage.
Joan called him evil and vile and a man who was destroying everything around him. Goldine believed Joan and grew to hate Peter Fabiano, even though she had never met the man. Goldine said, quote, Joan said he mistreated his wife and that he was dealing in narcotics. She told me that he was always bothering and abusing her at home. So I love how it's, he's not even selling drugs. He's selling narcotics. Mm-hmm. Like that.
That's the proper term of the day.
It is. It is.
Wouldn't be dope for like another few years.
True.
So, yeah.
Okay, fine. But I like how it wasn't like marijuana, cocaine.
Yeah.
It was narcotics.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah. See, he had narcotics.
Yeah.
Pull up my pants up to my nipples. Tighten the belt. Make sure they stay there with my hat that says press on it for some fucking reason. Pretty soon, Peter was all they were talking about. So that's another thing. Like, here you are trying to like have this like chick time and y'all are just talking about this other dude. Ugh. Anyways.
Yeah, but that was real fun.
Oh, God, right? Joan would tell her how evil he was and that all of the horrible things that he was doing to Betty and their children. Goldine now knew Peter was a monster that needed to be destroyed. Quote, Joan and I discussed killing Peter Fabiano many times. We were undecided whether to use poison, a knife, or a gun.
Just a random dinner time conversation?
No. You know, this is when they're laying in bed, having a cigarette, having just done some kind of fucking acrobatic, amazing sexual thing. And they're smoking a cigarette.
It's their pillow talk.
And they're like, how are we going to kill this motherfucker? And then they're, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I see. While one of them's trying to pin their hair back up into place. And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some. Yikes. Weird jazz music playing in the background. There's a neon light shining in through the window. Like,
I can't get over that being the main topic of conversation in your relationship.
Right.
Horrible.
They finally settled on a gun, and Joan gave Goldine enough money to buy the .38 revolver in Pasadena. Goldine told the gun dealer she needed it for home protection, and she only bought 2 bullets.
Okay. So as long as there's not more than 2 assailants, you're safe.
Could you imagine being that gun dealer and being like, man, why you only take like the it holds more than 2 bullets? And you're like,
sure, that gun dealer charged her 3 times the retail for it and then probably told her all you need is these 2 rounds. And
yeah.
We're still talking about the 50. Yeah,
that's true. Okay.
We're lucky or not, I guess not lucky, but it's surprising that he gave her live rounds and not blanks because, yeah.
Well, Peter would have appreciated that.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's not lucky. So
yeah. Okay. On Halloween night, Joan decided no one would notice a person dressed up in disguise walking to another person's door. So it was the perfect night to commit the crime. Joan had brought Goldine to the beauty salon so she would know what Peter looked like. So she's just so fucking mad at this guy.
This is all our relationship is about, baby.
Fuck that guy, right? The night of the murder, Joan showed up to pick up Goldine in a strange car, right? Because she's in Margaret's car, not her car. Goldine's costume was simple. It consisted of a pair of jeans, a khaki jacket, a hat and red gloves, a domino mask, and dark face paint disguised her facial features. The gun was hidden in a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
So what was she dressed as? Like a robber? Like, that's kind of what I see is like the old timey, like robbers.
Yeah, that's kind of what I get from it.
Yeah. Okay. And like a cat burglar. Like, that's what. So they dressed her like a criminal. To go commit instead of like Batman or we have Batman.
I'm thinking more like something from like the Marx Brothers or something, like a stick up man or something. Yeah, is what they were going for.
Like, it's so, very Pink Panther to me. Like, that's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. It's very on the nose, but all right, cool.
You're going to look like what you are.
No one will ever suspect. Okay. The two women drove to the Fabianos at 9 p.m. and waited in the car for 2 hours until the lights went out in the bedroom. All right, go do it, Joan said to her. So Goldeen put on the mask, walked to the front door, knocked, and rang the doorbell twice. Peter answered the door. Goldeen was so nervous and scared she was shaking, and she almost wasn't able to hold the gun. Quote, I had to use the left hand to hold the right hand in order to pull the trigger. That, for one, didn't matter, because once she did pull the trigger, she hit her mark. Goldeen then rushed back to the car, where Joan kissed her and said, thank you. Thank you, baby, for killing this man I was really mad at, for mm-hmm. taking his wife away from me. Mm-hmm. Baby, yep. Love you. They dropped the car off at Margaret's house in Hollywood, leaving the khaki jacket inside. So again, not the best criminals, but
no,
okay.
not at all.
Forget you ever knew me, Joan said to her. And then they walked away, going separate directions.
So they literally based their relationship around
Joan.
Well, yeah.
Based her relationship around getting Goldeen, getting her to under her control, convincing her to kill someone, and then being like, mm-hmm. we can now never see each other again. That's like, that's fucked up. Damn. Okay. Goldeen burned the rest of the costume the following night and hid the gun in the locker, where it stayed until police found it a month later. One of the two bullets was still inside the gun. The other one was in Peter.
Yeah. So
there you go. Charged with first degree murder, Joan pleaded not guilty, and Goldeen insanity. She did have some mental illness, but that had nothing to do with her sexuality. Just her obsessiveness with Joan, and that she was willing to kill a complete stranger just to please her lover. That's pretty intense. Yeah. On March 11th, 1958, just before their trials were set to start, both women cut plea deals for second degree murder. This sparked a public outcry, viewed as being too soft on the killers, but it seemed unlikely a jury would send Goldeen to the gas chamber, even though she confessed to killing a complete stranger in cold blood. And if they couldn't convict Goldeen, then there was no way they were going to convict Joan. Goldeen was released from prison and went on to live a long life. She died in 1998.
Yeah, that she was somebody's old grandma out there.
Joan is presumed to have gotten out of prison as well, but not much is known about her whereabouts. I did find an obituary in California for a Joan Rabel or Rabel, however you say her name, and she didn't die until like 2012. That would have put her in her 90s.
Yeah, but surely she would have changed her name.
I don't know.
I mean, mm-hmm.
interesting.
No telling.
Betty went on to live a full life, presumably as well, dying in 1999. So the Y2K craze took out Betty right there. But you have to wonder, if Goldeen did it for Joan, did Joan do it for Betty? And did Betty ask her to?
Yeah, we don't know. Like, did they ever hook back up? Do they stay in mm-hmm. contact? You never know.
Mm-hmm. It was very well planned out. And had that anonymous tip never come in about that gun, then, and I have a theory about that. Mm-hmm. Because say you're Goldeen mm-hmm. and you killed this guy for your girlfriend mm-hmm. that you're obsessed with and thought you were going to be with. Mm-hmm. But spoiler, once you two commit this murder, she don't want to see you no more.
Right.
So what would you do to get her back? Especially if you knew that you couldn't hold this secret, like you were eventually going to crack and now you were alone or whatever. Would you happen to make an anonymous tip?
Yeah, maybe. But that would be, you would be really kind of betting on the fact that you would get off yourself.
I don't think she thought she would get off herself.
She just thought she was going to take Joan down.
I mean, what better revenge than that? I mean, and if she was already willing to kill a complete stranger for this woman, you know, she had to be pissed off.
Yeah.
Whenever they were no longer together. And yeah. Who else would have known anything about that locker? Those lockers are like the ones where you have one key, like you, and as long as you're paying it or whatever, you're able to keep the locker. And why would somebody randomly report it? I mean, yeah, it was a gun, but people had guns.
Yeah.
There, no one else would have really put that together.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, could be.
So that's the trick or treat murder.
Hey, y'all, this is Brittany and Daniel from the new podcast, Chilled and Thrilled. We're a married couple who love to laugh and tell scary stories about true crime, the paranormal, and all things creepy.
Join us each Saturday for a deep dive into this macabre and twisted world we live in. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen.
Let's get chilled and thrilled.
All right. What you got, me?
Well, I went tripping around over a bunch of different Halloween related cases because, unlike what you said, there are, in fact, more than two.
That's fake news.
And the one that I came across that had, I literally could have continued chasing this rabbit hole probably forever. This story just gets more and more bizarre, and I'm going to have to cull it down a little bit to just the basics, but it's okay. It's out there. Okay. So it's the disappearance of the unsolved disappearance of Cindy Song.
Okay.
Yeah. Strap in.
Okay.
We're going to go some weird places.
Okay, cool. Let's go.
All right. So Hyun Jong Song, or Cindy, as she was known to her friends, was born and raised in South Korea. She moved to the U.S. at the age of 15 to live with her aunt and uncle in the town of Springfield, Virginia. She seemed to do quite well studying in the U.S., and upon graduation, she would go on to attend Penn State University.
Okay.
Future was looking bright for the young woman, and in 2001, at the age of only 21, she was nearing completing her bachelor's degree in art and was supposed to graduate the following spring. She seemed to have a very busy life, as she was a full-time student who was somehow managing to hold down two part-time jobs and had her own off-campus apartment in the town of State College. Despite...
Wait, the town is called State College?
Yeah, and that's really confusing until you figure that out.
That's weird. Okay.
Yeah. Despite her busy schedule, Cindy made plans to go out with a couple of friends on Halloween in 2001. Cindy and her friends Stacy Pack and Lisa Kim got dressed up and attended a costume party at a club called Players Nightclub. Cindy decided to dress up as a bunny that year. Her costume was comprised of a pair of bunny ears, a pink t-shirt with a bunny on it, a white tennis skirt with a fluffy tail attached, sheer stockings, and knee-high brown suede boots. To help ward off the icy Pennsylvania chill, she also wore a red hooded parka.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, I'm feeling it.
So the three partied it up until the early hours of November 1st, reportedly staying at the club until nearly 2 a.m. After leaving, the girls still weren't ready to hang it up, though, so they drove to a friend's house where they stayed up playing video games for the next couple of hours. And I think this was like Halloween's like on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so they had class the next day. She gets home at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And reading that, I was just like, God, I miss being young. Like,
even you imagine? Then, though, I couldn't have done that shit.
Well, I mean, it's still pretty. Maybe her first classes were like later in the day, but still, I'd still sleep for like 24 hours.
Yeah, I need a solid 8 hours. Like, if I'm like the walking dead whenever I had to do shit like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
they were troopers, apparently.
Like, now I couldn't physically do it now. Like, I would still, I'd have to call in, be like, look, I can't get out of bed. I've only been in this bed for like 2 hours. Cause then you're like having anxiety the entire time, trying to make yourself go to sleep, knowing you have to get up. So then you don't go to sleep. Yeah. Oh God.
So Stacy drives Cindy home and drops her off sometime around 4 a.m. In a move that she would no doubt come to regret, Stacy didn't stick around to make sure that Cindy made it safely inside. And so that would be the last time that she would ever see Cindy. She didn't even notice if she made it into the house.
Oh, yeah. Now, girls, we know when you drive up and you drop off your friend, even your drunk friend, you make sure they make it in.
Yeah.
Like we know that.
Yeah. So I'm sure she knew that too. And I'm sure that that's a terrible, like, burden horrible to carry.
Thing. Yeah.
So Cindy had a roommate that had been away visiting family on Halloween, and she got home later that day, November 1st, and the apartment was empty. So nothing seemed to miss, but Cindy was nowhere to be found. It wasn't until November 4th when she was formally reported as missing, and then an additional 2 days after that before a search of the apartment would be conducted. Investigators believe that she did make it into the apartment, but then left a short time after.
Why do they think she went in the apartment?
Well, I'm about to tell you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry.
The fake eyelashes that she had worn that evening were on the bathroom counter, and her backpack and her phone were in the apartment as well. But her purse was missing and the apartment door was locked when the roommate arrived home.
So she left?
Not far from the apartment, there was a 24-hour convenience store that Cindy would sometimes walk to, often at random hours in the middle of the night. And it's often theorized that upon returning home early on the 1st, she might have decided to take a quick stroll down to the store for something. And then it was during that walk where something actually happened.
Oh, no, girl.
Police checked her phone records and online activity, but could find nothing out of sorts. There were no incoming or outgoing phone calls after she was dropped off at home. So it doesn't appear that she contacted anyone else that evening who could have had a hand in her disappearance. Investigators ran down the typical avenues of investigation. They went through her diary and found references to experiences with marijuana and ecstasy.
Oh, no. But yeah,
her friends were adamant that she was not a user. She just had experimented like all of them were doing.
Right.
They also looked into her mental state. She had gone through a pretty rough breakup with a boyfriend recently. It seemed like it had been a pretty serious relationship, and the two had been living together even. So some family members floated theories that maybe she could have like been distraught and like wandered off or maybe even taken her own life. But her friends shoot that down too and say, no, she was actually going to therapy and she was taking medication. So yeah. She was doing fine.
Right.
Something's amiss. But that was pretty much it. Like everybody around her was vetted and there was nothing on any of them. There was no real evidence at the scene. There was pretty much nothing. So it pretty much immediately starts growing cold.
Hmm.
Without suspects, evidence, like there was nothing to go off of.
Yeah.
A little bit after the disappearance, it may have been a week or so, there was a person who came forward and made an allegation that they had seen a girl matching Cindy's description in Chinatown, which was like 200 miles away, either in a car that passed her screaming for help or possibly being like shoved into a car. But as the police continued to question this person, the story changed like every time they talked to him. So they finally were like, yeah, this is just a waste of our time. This is just, there's nothing to it. So once again, cold, there was nothing.
Ah, the worst.
Until 2003, when investigators received some very unexpected info. So in June of that year, a career criminal decided to tell the police a disturbing story in hopes that he might receive a little leniency on a felony burglary charge he was facing. The man, Paul Weekly, told investigators that some associates of his, men named Hugo Selinsky and Michael Krakowski, had picked up a woman that they thought was a prostitute in State College one night who was out walking. The pair took the woman to Hugo's house in Hunlock Creek, where they beat and raped her over the course of several days. When they weren't using the woman, they kept her captive in a large gun safe. Once they were tired of her, they simply left her to die in it.
Oh?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. So we got to talk about this guy.
Wait, first of all, why do motherfuckers that have lowlife friends and other criminals call them their associates?
Right.
No, you're not part of a fucking association. You're not a professional. You don't have associates. You have douchebag, dirtbag friends.
Right.
Like, you're a piece of shit. You don't get an associate. It's
funny how they try to like plump themselves up like that.
Yeah. Me and my associates. No. you dick face. Like, oh God, I hate that. Okay, go ahead with these douchebags.
Okay, so Hugo Selinsky was born August 1st, 1973 in Sioux City, Iowa. His parents will divorce before he's 5 years old. And despite being the son of a prominent Midwestern family, Hugo's father, Robert, will do hard time for being a jewelry thief. Mm. He would also be absent in pretty much all of his son's life after the divorce. So his mother goes on to remarry and have four more children by her new husband, Ron Selinsky. Hugo's youth seems to have been far less tumultuous after his father's exit, and he grew up having just about every opportunity afforded to him that a kid could ask for. All that seemed to be going well until he turned 14, at which point he decided that he wanted a wild way of life, as his stepfather puts it. This way of life would include numerous criminal charges while still a juvenile, including four car thefts, multiple DUIs, and driving with a suspended license.
He's 14?
14, when he starts all this shit.
He's fucking 14. Like, bro, yeah. Go the fuck home. What is he, like, in eighth grade?
By the time he's a sophomore in high school, he would become a father himself.
Okay.
He manages to graduate high school, but barely, graduating second to last in his high school.
Go for it, boy. That sounds like one of those push him out. That's yeah. not it. He didn't graduate. They're yeah. just like, give this fool a credit and get him the fuck out of our school. Yeah.
In the yearbook, his senior year, he was voted most likely to be in detention. But if only they would have known, like, what kind of detention that would be in the future.
But that's so corny.
Like, foreshadowing.
Most likely to be in detention after school.
But this dude, yeah. like, he after his sophomore year, like, they would put his name in the yearbook, but he didn't go often enough to have a picture or anything else. So it was just like a blank box with his name under it. Oh my like, God. he was a fucking mess. So after he gets out of high school, though, he tries to set his life right and he joins the Marines. But then he ends up getting discharged because he can't go to boot camp because he had had a motorcycle wreck. So he manages to recover from the motorcycle wreck and make it through basic, and all seems to be going forward. And then the Marines discover that he owes over $3,000 in restitution for his teenage antics to the Luzerne County Juvenile Court. So they kick him out again because that's a fraudulent enlistment because he has all these debts that he didn't like.
List.
Yeah. So he tries to make ends meet for the next couple of years, but seems to have trouble holding down a job. Imagine that. In June of 1994, he and another man come up with a brilliant plan, though, to end their money woes.
To rob something.
They decide to rob the Mellon Bank in Plains Township. The two manage to pull off the heist, but a clerk manages to get a dye pack in with the money bag. The pack explodes, covering all the money in red dye. Frustrated, the men try to run the money through a washing machine in hopes of removing the damning substance, but it doesn't work. And then not long after that, the FBI nabs both of them, and Hugo is sentenced to 82 months in federal prison. No doubt shorter because he admits to authorities that he's also been running cocaine from Philadelphia.
Oh, so he's a narc, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's during his prison sentence that he will become friends with Paul Weekly, who was at the time serving out a sentence for building a pipe bomb. This is the guy that will go that goes on to rat on him. This is where he meets him in the pen. So he gets released and comes back home in January of 2001. He tries to go home and lives with his stepfather, but his stepfather was pretty much
done with him. Yeah.
And was embarrassed that, you know, he gave this kid every opportunity and the little shit goes off and tries to rob a bank. And he's just like, not get the fuck out of here. So in April of 2001, a local pharmacist by the name of Michael Kirkowski is charged with selling drugs without a prescription. Yeah, that Michael Kirkowski. So in early 2002, Kirkowski will be found guilty of selling prescription painkillers. He and his girlfriend, Tammy Lynn Fassett, will vanish. And it kind of, it wasn't surprising. I don't know why he was out.
Yeah.
Considering he's looking at 64 years.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he just doesn't show up for a sentencing and he's in the wind.
How the fuck did he get bail? Well, if he had no previous priors.
Yeah. And that was the thing, is he actually was squeaky clean up into this. Mm-hmm. I guess he just realized how much fucking money he could make being dirty.
Mm-hmm. Selling that Oxy.
That's exactly what he was selling, mm-hmm. was Oxy. Yep. So it's during this tumultuous time that Paul Weekly gets out of prison and he comes to live with Hugo. So he arrives sometime in April.
How was that? How do they even let that happen? Usually your parole officer is like,
It kind of depends like on the situation. I mean, and unless they're checking up on him regularly.
True. They
wouldn't know. How the fuck are they going to know? But yeah, he comes to live there sometime in April, which is not long before Krakowski disappears. So investigators are believing that Krakowski and Tammy had fled the area to avoid his sentencing. Mm-hmm. And that belief is also shared by Krakowski's father. So Hugo capitalizes on this and makes no less than 3 visits to Michael's father's house, claiming to be in contact with the fugitive son and extorting him out of $30,000 twice. Then the third time, the elder Krakowski becomes suspicious and tells Hugo that he wants to speak to his son before he turns over any more money. Selinsky becomes enraged and fires a pistol, so Krakowski relents and hands him another $40,000. Don't know where he's got all this money from.
$100,000.
100 grand, right.
Damn.
So Mr. Krakowski turns around and he reports this robbery to the police, but they don't do anything for 6 months. No explanation as to why. So that brings us back up to 2003, though, okay, with Mr. Weekly singing on his good buddy, Hugo Selinsky.
Because he's back in prison somehow.
He's been picked up.
He got caught trying to burglarize
and
something.
He's trying to save himself from getting his, you know, parole revoked and going back.
Right.
So he's like, just, I'll tell you anything you want to know. So not only does he tell them how Cindy met her demise, but it's like he can't stop just like singing. So he goes on to tell them that the missing Mr. Krakowski had met his fate also at the hands of Hugo, allegedly because the piece of shit had kept Cindy's bunny ears as a trophy. And Hugo, being a man of some type of honor, was like, no, that's not right. And so he killed him.
Yeah, well, he probably didn't want to get caught.
Right.
It wasn't anything to do with fucking honor.
All this time, they've been looking for Krakowski, thinking he's a fugitive from justice when they should have been looking for a corpse. But Paul,
what happened
to
Tammy?
Hold on. Okay. Paul could save them some trouble on that front, too. He knew exactly where Michael and Tammy were, as well as 14 other people. And he was willing to show them exactly where they were.
Shut the front door. 14 other people.
And it's also, you should also take into account that at the time, this Hugo guy is 29.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So June 5th, 2003, during a party at Selinsky's house, a dozen police cruisers roll onto the 6-acre property that he shares with his then girlfriend. They arrest him on the robbery charges finally.
Right.
And then they begin the search.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a lot of stuff. There are so many human remains there. They're not even sure how many bodies there are. They do manage to identify the remains of Michael and Tammy, just like Paul said, mm-hmm. and then 2 other local drug dealers. They're not sure how many bodies there are exactly, but it's between 12 and 16. But they're so badly burned that they can't identify who the other ones are.
Oh, no.
So they can't identify if any of them are actually Cindy, but they also point out that he didn't live in that house when she vanished. But this dude seems to know how to dispose of bodies pretty well. Right. So, yeah, there's a good chance that either she's one of those or he's got more somewhere. We really don't know.
Oh, my God.
It's weird because it's like if that dude, Paul, wouldn't have gotten caught and decided to turn rat, like how much longer would this dude have been like building this body farm? And like, who the fuck were all these people?
Right.
Because he had only been out of prison and living in that property. He had been out of prison for 2 years, but he'd only been living at that property for 1 year. And he had already accumulated possibly 16 bodies.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
and just 16 bodies while he was there.
Yeah. That or that were still there. And there's.
But he hasn't. But they can't get him to admit to Cindy's.
No, they can't.
And the other guy that attacked her is dead. So yeah.
The dude that allegedly is the one who killed her is the one that he allegedly killed. So
that poor baby, that's fucking horrible.
Yeah, but there's so much more to, you can't like stop finding more information about the kind of shit that like goes on around this circle.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking, his girlfriend has been in and out of prison, partially related to charges associated with him, some not. Like, there's just so much shit to wade through on this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the poor Cindy girl she seemed to just be in the wrong place at the wrong fucking right. time. But all these other people, who fucking knows what this dude's up to? Like, it's luckily he is or was charged and I believe sentenced for the murder of Michael and Tammy. But
good.
I mean, obviously you shouldn't feel sorry for that dude either, because he's still a piece of shit.
But, yeah.
Like, yeah.
But Tammy was just a girlfriend. Do we know anything about Tammy?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. All right. I don't want to hear no more about Tammy. But yeah. I mean, but still, they should have, you know.
I mean, they were running an OxyContin ring.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Shit was shady. Like, there's a lot.
But fuck. I mean, like, wow. He's just whacking people.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to hear all about the Wheeler dude, and you came in with this other guy.
Yeah.
That poor baby. Oh, I feel so horrible for her. Like, murder is one thing. I mean, a murder is horrible and it is terrible. But when you have the mental ability to torture someone over and over and over again, that's fucking sadistic as hell.
And some of the articles that I read that like were really deep dives into Zelensky, without trying to like paint him into being like a good guy, they really all kind of make it seem more like Michael was the one who was the mastermind of that crime, and that Zelensky's taking out of him was like a vengeful fucking thing. Like, he was like, this dude's fucked up. Like, it was cool when he was helping me or he was making me money and we had this going on.
Okay, so it was,
but he's crossed the fucking line.
It was
here.
The OxyContin guy that was raping and torturing. And,
yeah.
And Hugo's like, I kill a lot of people, but.
But this is fucked up. This is fucked up even for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because there's all these, I mean, the locals, when this all went down, were just like amazed, because Hugo, like, he was a hard ass type guy, but there's all these accounts of like people. Like, he let people's kids ride their four wheelers on his property, and he was like always super fucking nice to everybody. Like, he didn't grab people at random. It seemed like most of the murders seemed to have been associated with the like drug trade that was going on.
Yeah.
But who fucking knows? Like, it's, you could literally read on this case for days and not even scratch the surface, because then there's another case that's also connected with more missing girls, and damn. Like, yeah, it's fucking wild.
Oh, poor Cindy. I'm so sorry, honey.
So, yeah.
Ladies, be careful walking around at night to go to a store, even if you're used to doing it all the time. You never know. I mean, have somebody with you, something. Just get
Halloween is a delivered. Terrible time to do it, because you're wearing a costume. Even people that normally recognize you may not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a regular of a store that you're going to and people know who you are, they could be like, oh yeah, I saw. Yeah. You've got a
poor thing. That just breaks my heart.
Now this one, the horror is not, it's just the depths of it and how much more there seems to be to the whole, like, there's a lot here. And this dude, he's still fighting for appeals and still, but it seems like every couple of years more and more shit comes out, not necessarily about him, but just about something around this whole area. And didn't know Pennsylvania had this kind of shit going on.
Pennsylvania, calm down.
Yeah.
Calm down. All right. Well, ending that on a serious note.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Ladies, be careful. Halloween. But just be careful.
In general, people are trash.
Yeah, be careful. So, like we said, last episode before Halloween, maybe we're going to dress up for Halloween, sit in our house.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe we do some like gore makeup. Like
we've been burnt. I got to clean it all up. And that's just
all right. Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Head over to our website at mystifiedpod.com and you can find more info on this episode, our other episodes. You can leave us a review on there or subscribe to our show. You can also support us if you want to. You like what we do? Cool. Leave us a review. You super duper like what we do? You can like leave us a tip. Give us a couple dollars. Why not? Like, woo! I'll stick it in the side part of my underwear. Like, bah, bah, bah. Yeah, no.
No.
No. I'll still do. Don't. Yeah, no, that'd be cool. It's cool. It's like, it's called Buy Me a Coffee. So, yeah, it's like they like buy you a coffee, which is like them tipping you. So, it's, yeah.
I see.
It's pretty neat. It's a neat little thing that our website has now. You can find us on Instagram and on Facebook. There are direct links from our website, but if you want to go to those directly, it's a Mystified_pod on Instagram and Mystified Podcast Discussion Group on Facebook. We would love to chat and talk to you there. Please, if you do like what we do, don't worry about dollars. Just leave us a review. We would really appreciate that. Some stars and a little comment. And for the reviews we do get, thank you. We do read them. They're awesome. We appreciate it. They make us happy cry. Well, me, happy cry. I got a little teary. But any words to parting words to end this episode on?
It's just always a good idea to be careful this time of year, especially around Halloween. I found way too many stories of just random acts of fucking violence on Halloween. People knocking on doors, mistaking houses, getting shot. Halloween seems to bring out a specific type of terrible person.
Yeah.
And just be careful. Just because you're out having a good time doesn't mean that you might not stumble across somebody that's an absolute piece of shit.
Yeah. Always be careful, ladies and guys.
Yeah. Everybody.
Both. Everybody just be fucking careful. I mean, no matter what gender you're going with, just be careful.
Yeah.
We love and support you all. Watch your surroundings, please. It's important. Especially this time of the year. So cool. Well, I don't have any parting words for that one other than we'll just make the best of Halloween and hopefully 2021's Halloween is a little better. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
That'd be good. We'll appreciate that. All right, guys. Until next time. Bye.
Mystified.
Podcast.